Hi, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live. And I know I say it every week, another wonderful guest. But this week, a really wonderful guest, James Sokol, who's been a friend of mine for a long time. And I have been trying to cajole him into coming and doing a Love Letters with me because of his personal experience with opera and Broadway and just because of him. And so now it turns out that there's something that he is doing that he wants the world to know about. So I said, come do this with me. James, just start by telling people about Broadway at the JCC, and then we could return to it later after we talk about you.
Goodness, after that introduction, I feel like you're going to need to interview someone else, not me.
No. Just you twice.
Just me twice.
So what is going on? It's May 5th.
Okay, May 5th.
Let's say it right away so people can mark it down in their calendars if they like.
Yeah. May 5th, we are doing a special event called Celebrating Broadway, A Journey of Love.
Mm-hmm.
And we have Kimberly Bryant.
Tell us where it is.
It's at the Oshermer and JCC in San Rafael.
And there's a website we can say nice and clearly?
Yes. www.marinjcc.org/celebration.
Okay. One more time.
marinjcc.org.
marinjcc.org/celebration. Celebration.
Exactly.
And I like to do that because if people get one letter off, they'll never find you.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay. So who's going to be?
So, yes, we have Kimberly Bryant coming from New York. Kimberly is the only singer to have ever played all three principal female roles in Andrew Lloyd Webber's Phantom of the Opera.
Oh, my goodness.
So okay. the leading heroine, mm-hmm. Christine.
So you're having three people.
Three in one.
All right.
Yeah, I'm sure she'd love to know we're talking about her that way. She played Christine, which of course is the heroine, and then Carlotta, which is the big diva, and then Madame Giry. And so she has that honor of playing all three.
And it's going to be really a celebration outdoors and with tables. And
no, we are inside.
Uh-huh.
What we're teaming up to take folks on a journey of love. Mm-hmm. We're going to look at love songs through the ages.
Oh, I see. Okay. Love songs through the ages. That's wonderful.
And there'll be part video clips.
Okay.
Where we revisit old favorite Broadway shows. And then Kimberly will sing as
wonderful.
Well. So fun combo.
So I have a question about you then, because I know that your life has been a large part of your life, or I'd say kind of the driving force has been opera and Broadway
and
music. And I like love songs through the ages since I'm about love letters and we have to get to that.
Indeed.
So talk about you. What was your first awareness that this was where you belonged?
Oh, gosh. You know, when I was little, my parents had music in the house all the time.
Yes.
And, you know.
Opera or Broadway or doesn't matter?
All of it. You know, all of it. It was opera, Broadway, some classical, mm-hmm. you know, but mostly opera and Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
And when we would, you know, get into my dad's car and I'll go, it could have been out to dinner, it could have been a road trip. He would pop in the 8-track tape,
uh-huh.
if you remember those.
Yes, I do.
And we would hear Kismet, we'd hear Oklahoma, oh. we'd hear South Pacific, we'd
so
hear.
So what did that do to you?
How
old were you that you remember?
Oh, gosh. Six, uh-huh. seven. And it became a sing-along. You know, mm-hmm. by the time you've heard those songs so many times,
right.
you know all the words. And it was really fun.
And so talk about your life from there. I mean, where did it get into that you are teaching opera so beautifully? I mean, I went to one of your series. I went to an 8-class series, and it was
oh.
wonderful.
Well, thank you.
And you're, I mean, the way you do it is a performance also.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, it's easy to get swept away, whether it's Broadway or opera. It's easy
so
to get swept
about
away.
So talk about, how did you get so educated, for example, in opera, and at what point did you start to teach classes? I don't know. Let's talk about some of your trips. And
well, so with opera, I was taken to my first opera when I was 6.
Mm-hmm.
And first Broadway, gosh.
And you sat still through it.
Oh, yeah. In fact, it was Carmen. It was when the Metropolitan yes. Opera used to tour. And I was 6. My brother was 9.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents took us, we lived in Columbus, took us up to Cleveland, 3-hour drive.
Oh.
And we were seeing Carmen. Mm-hmm. And that overture started, you know, dun, 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 and I got so excited. And about halfway through the overture, I turned to my brother to say, isn't this amazing? And he was asleep.
Oh, excuse me.
I always say that set the pattern for the rest of our lives.
Oh, really?
He's still asleep.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so you had no one to say that to.
Exactly, but I just loved it. And, you know, Carmen for a Kid is a long opera.
Yes.
We drove back home afterwards, back to Columbus. Mm-hmm. My parents made the mistake of saying, once we got into the car, James, what did you think about the show?
Oh, that's what I want to know.
And I talked the entire way back. Well, Act One looked like this, you know, castle. It didn't look like a cigarette factory. And when the soprano came out, she, and I went on and on, and my parents are driving, and they couldn't get a word in edgewise.
Why would they want to?
Well,
I mean, to hear, first of all, how absolutely fascinating that you noticed all that, and that you could put it into word, that it was so front in your mind.
Oh, yeah. Well, when I was little, my parents had read us bedtime stories, of course, like many mm-hmm. parents. And some of the stories they would read us were the synopses to operas.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, why
because
didn't that
put you... Because it's a short
story. It's a short story, and it's the same story.
Yeah.
Over and over and over again.
But, you know, when you think about it, like Carmen, yes. This cool gypsy.
That's
who,
a little different.
You know,
there are some, but yes. So which ones did you like? I mean, I listen a lot. And between the, you know, revenge and the, you know, she fell in love with the gardener who really turned out to be the prince of them, and the mother's
exactly.
saying that. And then you can tell that silence where somebody's going to come out of the closet or back room, closet when that meant something different.
Right.
Or come out of the back room in. Yes. So what were the synopses? What were the stories that you liked?
Oh, well, I loved Carmen.
Yes.
I thought Turandot, of course, this bitchy, icy princess from China who, uh-huh. you know, was cutting off guys' heads if they didn't solve the three riddles. And then in came Caliph and he solved them. And, oh my God, what am I going to do now? You know, and I thought that was fabulous.
So they are like fairy tales, really,
totally.
I guess, when you're thinking of telling it to a child. Because those fairy tales are all the same. They're about danger and coming through it. Ah.
Revenge, vengeance, love, all of that stuff
yes.
that's so universal.
Yes.
Or Aida, you know, set in Egypt and the pyramids and all that, which, you know, I thought was fascinating.
And it's so visual also for you.
Absolutely.
Yes. Oh,
absolutely.
You know, I did not think of them. I never thought, that's such a good thank you. I never thought of the plots as being so akin to fairy tales.
Yeah.
In their sameness and in their danger is lurking and
For sure.
Okay.
For sure. So a synopsis, which is, you know, usually a couple pages,
mm-hmm.
is a perfect short story
yes,
for a kid.
You're so right. I'm gonna try that with the next kid I see.
I love it.
Oh,
I love
that's
it.
Really good.
And then keep in mind that we had that, but then they were also playing some of the music in the house and the car,
mm-hmm.
et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm putting two and two together. So by the time we got to Carmen, mm-hmm. this performance, I was ready to go. You know, and just loved every minute of it. Loved
and so did they take you to many more? Or did a lot of...
They did. The next year they
did they take your brother?
No, he got to do other things. It wasn't, they didn't want to spend that kind of money on someone who was going to take a nap.
Yes.
So yes, then I went to Turandot and then a couple years later I begged to go to Aida
mm-hmm.
and they at first didn't want to take me because Aida was long and they didn't want me to fall asleep the way my brother had.
Mm-hmm.
And we ended up going. This was at Cincinnati Opera. And I will never forget, before the curtain, the general director stepped forward and he said, the soprano who is to sing tonight is ill. And she has not attended any of the rehearsals.
Mm-hmm.
She, however, is going to start the show.
Oh.
And this was the famous soprano, Johanna Meyer.
Mm.
I'll never forget.
Mm.
And she came out. And she sang the whole show, and it was so beautiful.
Uh-huh.
I was so taken by the vulnerability, and yet she
uh-huh.
rose above it and just sang. And it was spectacular. So the next day, got home. Next day, I sent a letter to the general director.
Okay.
Saying how magical that was and how exciting. And by the way, I'd like to see this opera, this opera, this opera. And would you cast this soprano and that tenor and this baritone?
And how old were you at this point?
At this point, I was 9.
Oh, you know, it's funny because at some point I'm going to say to you, who gets your love letter and have you written them? But that counts.
Oh.
My goodness.
Absolutely.
So you knew to do that.
And he wrote back.
That's what I want to know.
Saying, because I had said, you know, I'm 9 years old, mm-hmm. yada, yada. And he wrote back saying, I love your suggestions And I want to meet you next time you come down.
Oh, my goodness. I'm going to cry. Do you still have that letter?
I don't have the letter, but I have the friendship.
Okay.
So okay, that, yes, for me, yes, is the real payoff.
Sure.
And we started a long association with Cincinnati Opera. Oh. And I became a season subscriber at age, 10?
12. Yes, yes, 10,
exactly.
Yes.
And we got involved, did volunteer work for them. My mother was on the board for years, et cetera. And so it was very special, very special. But I never thought of opera as a career, really.
Well, what were you thinking of as a career? Well, were you thinking of a career at 10 anyway?
I mean, no. Right. But even in undergrad,
oh, really?
I was not so career-minded.
You were studying?
Like most, when you're an undergrad, you figure you've got to do something very practical that's
going
to position you for a job,
and make the world a better place.
Exactly. Yeah. So given all that, of course I had to choose something very practical like French literature.
Oh, yeah. Is that what you did?
I did.
Uh-huh.
The real reason is I just wanted to spend my junior year in France and have it count.
I see. Okay.
And it worked.
That is practical.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then after undergrad, I went to New York, like many in my year, and you go to New York, figure out what you want to do. And I ended up having all sorts of interviews from, goodness me, from the Metropolitan Museum to, I think I was interviewed at Planned Parenthood. I was interviewed at all over the place. I really had no idea what I wanted to do. And then I ended up in an interview at New York City Opera.
And you didn't think of doing that first, or that was just in the line of things that were possibilities?
Because I was at Juilliard for an interview right across the street, and I had my resume in hand, and so I thought, well, I'll drop it by. Why not? I never thought about what makes an opera company work. You know,
just about what you loved was inside you. So that was it.
Well, and that, as audience members, we go in, we pay our ticket, we go in, the curtain goes up, we enjoy it, hopefully. Mm-hmm. The curtain comes down, we're done.
Mm-hmm.
At that age, I just had never really thought about the work that goes into
it. Yes, of course.
And long story longer, the next thing you know, I'm sitting across from Beverly Sills, who I've never been a starstruck person except Beverly.
Mm-hmm.
And so there I am sitting across from Beverly, and she's saying to me, honey, you're hired.
Uh-huh.
And
On the basis of what?
Well, yes, actually I do.
Please tell us.
So, what have you done when you've graduated from undergrad? A few summer jobs and whatnot. And so she's looking through my resume and she's asking some questions, this and that. And then she notices that I've done a little bit of cooking and catering.
Oh.
And she said, and Beverly, of course, loved to eat. And she said, leans back in her chair and she says to me, now, wait a minute. Mm-hmm. You tell me you've catered and you can cook? And I said, well, yes, I've done some. I mean, I was very honest with the scope of it. And she leans back in her chair and she says, well, what can you make? And honestly, I don't know what came over me. I mirrored her, leaned back in my chair, and said, well, what would you like? And she looked at me with this big grin, and she said, honey, you're hired.
Oh, that's just so good.
And I started looking around the room. She said, what's wrong? I said, I'm looking for Alan Funt. He's hiding here somewhere. And she started to laugh, and I laughed. And even though it was the lowest paying job I was offered, I knew I had to take it. And 10 days later, I started just a few days later, and 10 days after I started, I was home. That was it.
Oh, you knew.
I knew. Absolutely.
So how long were you there, and then how did that translate? I want to know the flow of it, because I remember so clearly from the class I took from you about opera starting with the Greek choruses. In case you think I wasn't paying attention. There's no word ever spoken by somebody I like I've forgotten, by the way.
I'm in trouble.
Everybody is. And starting from Greek opera and the changes that evolved into various operatic forms.
Sure.
And I can see that the next step was, of course, Broadway.
Well,
the recitative changes to real conversation, and then you still have the arias and the songs. And so what was your follow that bouncing
the path
ball
to Broadway? It was kind of a parallel path because, of course, Broadway really grew out of vaudeville. and that whole period, operetta, vaudeville, etc. And vaudeville, of course, were just different acts all thrown together. Mm-hmm. And then they started to take those acts and stream a very weak plot through them. But the acts didn't, it didn't really tie
together.
Oh, that
was that light opera. Is that what you're...
Well, and how do I say this? I mean, it was still vaudeville, mm-hmm. but then they started adding these plots with songs that didn't really work. Mm-hmm. And then they started doing musical reviews like the Ziegfeld Follies mm-hmm. and whatnot.
Oh, yeah, that's a whole other branch. I wasn't thinking of that. Yes.
And then you get the creation of what's called the book musical. The first big book musical was Showboat, where the songs are integrated into the story. Uh-huh. And they make sense. It's not simply now we're going to do a hat trick or now we're going to have juggling.
True? That's true of opera also. The songs fit into the story.
Yeah, ideally, though, the opera's had its periods where you think, why are they singing this? But yes, yeah, so they're very similar that way. But my love of them also grew out of parallel.
I see. Okay.
When I was working at New York City Opera, I got to know, performing arts world's very small. Mm-hmm. And so, I'd be at a party or whatever and meet someone, a director, a chorister, whatever. Next thing you know, I'm opening on the show. Come see us, blah, blah.
Oh.
And so I spent so many nights in the theater mm-hmm. On Broadway, dance, ballet, opera, everything in New York. There's so much there, mm-hmm. of course. And so it just fueled my love of Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
And I've continued
that. At what point did you start teaching that history of opera?
Actually,
by the way, anybody who's in the San Francisco Bay Area, or I shouldn't say that because you take opera tours, you go all over the world.
Yeah, well,
anybody
yes.
who wants to do something amazing is to just join James in one of his opera events.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, well, go ahead. So how did you decide to start teaching?
The teaching came from when I was in undergrad, mm-hmm. and we had some extracurricular activities. One was called Gambier Experimental College. This was in the town of Gambier, Ohio, Kenyon College. And this was put on by students, and it was classes taught by students on everything from tasting champagne to quilting.
So you got to...
And so mm-hmm. I thought, well, I'll teach an opera class. Why not?
Were you an instant hit?
Well, I don't know about that, but we had a good time. We had a good time. And the Met was doing a broadcast from the Met. So my idea was, come take the class, and then we'll all watch. I think it was Puccini's Tosca.
And that's what you were doing in San Francisco also. You were taking people for dinner and talking about it, and then go...
Exactly. Yes. Exactly. So then when I was at New York City Opera, I was asked to teach a couple classes. Mm-hmm. And then when I came out here to San Francisco Opera, mm-hmm. They asked me to do a few classes, and it grew and grew. And it is what it is today, teaching all over the Bay Area.
It is wonderful.
Which is fun.
Yes. So that's interesting. I hadn't thought about that vaudeville because I heard the other day, I heard Tales of Hoffman.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm thinking, this has just got such a vaudeville echo.
Oh, that's interesting.
Listen to it next time. Uh-huh. You can just.
Well, and that's Offenbach, of course.
Very vaudeville.
And he did so much of that light comedy. That's what he's known for. Hoffman's his only opera.
Yes.
And everything else is, the famous Can-Can is Offenbach.
Oh, it's my favorite.
I want you to do it for me.
I can't now because I'm sitting down, but I will do it. I could do it. Not in these tight jeans because I couldn't get that leg up in the air. But
fair enough.
I can see what you mean now. So talk more about you. You want to tell that story just to get a flavor of James about when you wanted to learn how to make baklava?
Oh, goodness me.
Could you tell that?
The flavor of James and baklava.
The flavor of James and the part of James. I think everything about you started early. Your love of music and opera and cooking. I mean, I've been to you for dinner and it's just exceptional.
Well, thank you.
And so, yes, that started early too. So you wanted to learn to make baklava because...
Well, in fact, I never really thought about this before, but it all sort of ties together.
I know it does.
That my mother and I would play in the kitchen on Saturdays.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that's when the Metropolitan Opera would be doing their live from the Met broadcasts. So we would cook and have the opera going.
Mm-hmm.
So it all comes together. Life is
also,
either...
Also, your early awarenesses.
In what sense?
Well, in music and in cooking and...
Well, I think because I grew up with it, which is really a tribute to my parents and their exposure. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, we don't learn to not like opera unless we're told not to like it. But if it's put on in the background, either you take to it the way I did, or you don't, like my brother.
Right.
Either way is fine.
Right.
But having that exposure, you know.
Oh, that if you want to take to it, it's there for you to do it. Short
exactly.
Of hoping to.
Exactly.
But, you know, that's something you have to be wired for. Like anything, I think.
Like anything.
Right. So tell about Baklava. I love this story.
Oh, goodness. Well, so I don't remember how old I was, but I was a kid. And I had to be up my backside to learn how to make baklava. And so my mother agreed, and she had a dear friend, Annette, who was a self-proclaimed, underscored, bold, italicized, the self-proclaimed baklava expert. So Annette agrees to come teach me how to make baklava. And my mother goes to the grocery store to get all the ingredients.
And that's a lot.
It's a lot. Phyllo and butter and honey and this and that and the next thing.
Nuts.
And by the time you add it up, it's a pretty penny, you know, in a pan.
Right.
And so Annette comes over. Now we make this. And while we're cooking and mixing and whatnot, I'm saying, this seems like a lot of honey and this seems like a lot of liquid. No, no, no. She says it's absorbed by the phyllo. Okay.
Wait, your mother said this? No,
says this. She's the expert. Yeah. Okay. Now we put it into the oven. Annette leaves. We bring it out of the oven. My mother and I look at it. We say, well, gosh, it's awfully soupy, you know. And Mom reminds me, well, Annette did say, you know, the phyllo will absorb it. Right. And I said, well, when, you know? And we thought, well, as it cools, it'll absorb. Maybe that's the trick of phyllo. Who knows? Neither of us are Greek.
You can see that phyllo is not spongy.
Well, exactly. Like but what do I know? I'm 10, you know. What do I know of phyllo?
Right.
So we're standing there staring at the phyllo, waiting for it to absorb. Oh. We walk away. The whole thing cools down. We put it in the refrigerator, hoping for it to congeal or do something. It does nothing. Now, we pull it out of the refrigerator, and I'm looking at it, and my mother just throws her arms up in the air and says, my God, this is like soup. And we literally we went to cut it. Well, it's floating all over the place. My mother was so annoyed. She was so angry. Spent all this money. She calls Annette. What's happened? Annette says, I have no idea. Did you add anything? We can't figure it out. Okay. Now my mother says, well, we can't eat this. I said, well, we could serve it over ice cream as a sauce. This is a new thing now. We're creating baklava sauce. And my mother was so frustrated with it. She finally said, you know what? Forget it. I'm throwing it out. So she's about to pour it down the drain. Mm-hmm. My grandmother, who's visiting from Dayton, walks in and says, Barbara, what are you doing?
By the way, the baklava is soupy, but the plot is about to thicken.
There you go. If only the baklava had thickened.
Yep.
So my grandmother says, you can't throw that out. That's perfectly good, you know, baklava. That's perfectly good raw materials. My mother says to her mother, well, this is, it's like soup. We can't do anything with it. My grandmother insists we pack it into jars. And she's taking it back with her to Dayton. So we spend the next half hour ladling baklava into jars. Ladling. Ladle is not something one normally does with baklava.
What's wrong with that sentence?
Exactly. Yeah. So we ladle it into the jars. My grandmother takes it home. 4 days later, my grandmother calls up and says, I used the baklava. I poured it out.
You keep calling it baklava.
I used the soup.
Yes.
I added flour, oatmeal, and raisins and made the best oatmeal cookies ever. And everybody's asking for the recipe. And when I tell them I can't give it to them, they think I'm just being snooty and stubborn. When in fact, she has explained, you have to start with ruined soupy baklava. Yeah. And so there's the baklava story. Talk about making lemonade out of lemons or cookies
story.
Out of baklava.
This is when you first told me this story so long ago. I just wanted everybody to hear this. I don't know why. Because, you know, it is a wonderful lesson.
Absolutely.
As you say, in making lemonade out of lemons, or in this case, making lemons out of lemonade.
Right.
Going from the liquid to the solid.
Well, and the creativity of my grandmother.
Isn't that it?
To come up, who would ever think about adding flour and oatmeal to baklava soup?
Right.
Or whatever you want to call it.
Yes, that's wonderful.
Amazing.
And so where to from here? I mean, you're still teaching opera. You're still taking opera tours.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. It's interesting to hear you use the word tours, which you're right. They are tours for sure. But I've gotten to the point where...
Oh, trips. What do you call them?
Yeah, I call them cultural arts trips.
Okay.
Because, you know, when you say tour, frankly, I shudder.
It implies wandering around and seeing a lot of stuff.
Well, to me, it implies yellow flag... or yellow umbrella and matching yellow t-shirts.
Yes.
And that is not my thing at all. And so we really have moved away from that.
Okay.
You know, it has the feeling of a group of friends traveling together.
Yes.
Because the thing with tours, I find it insulting to treat adults like children.
Okay.
And so it's more of a shared
trip. And that's what tour implies to you. I can understand that. We were in China recently and Duncan Ding... with the yellow flag.
Yes.
Oh, I live for that yellow flag. You want to get lost in China?
No.
No, you want that yellow flag. Yes, but it's a different thing, of course.
So I own orange pants. Just as subtle as the yellow flag. But it's fun. It's great fun. We do opera tours. We do cultural arts tours.
And on the way there, on the plane, for example, or on the way, do you give a talk on it or a class on it, or do you...
Depends where we're going. And actually, most of the places we go, everybody gets to on their own. And then we meet at the hotel on the first night.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Because some people, you know, want to extend their stay to go early or whatever.
So you don't start off like in a chartered...
Exactly.
Well, people, if you want, as I said before, to do something exciting, do anything with James.
Oh,
anything
goodness.
At all. It does not even matter. Sit at a bus stop. But I don't know if you're doing that for public.
Well, actually, I got to laugh when you say sit at a bus stop because it makes me think of the year I spent in France.
Yes.
When, after, it was junior year abroad, and I would sit at the bus stop waiting to go home. And at that point, I had decided to learn to knit.
Oh,
and so
have to come back for this.
Well, my French mother taught me to knit, and I would sit and knit at bus stops. And a man in France knitting, let alone at a bus stop, was quite a sight.
Oh, yes. See, there you go.
Another story, another time.
Right, another story, another time. But my point, just I rest my case. It doesn't matter. At a bus stop. Okay. So just remember that on Sunday, May 5th at 2 o'clock is this wonderful Broadway celebration with James at the helm. And you get to see a lot, but mostly you get to meet James in person.
Wow. And hear the wonderful Kimberly Bryant.
Yes, and hear the wonderful Kimberly Bryant and just be part of James's world, which is really something special. So I thank you for doing this with me. I just want to point out that ordinarily I would say at this point, who gets your love letter today? And you have to come up with somebody.
Goodness.
Well, I actually had a thought a long time ago when I wanted you to come talk about Beverly Sills, which is just historically a letter to Beverly Sills.
Oh, yeah.
Just write it and then mail it to yourself. Because you can't mail it to her. Or if she has relatives you could find and mail it to.
Her daughter is alive.
Oh, well, then maybe you could do that someday.
Well, you know, I think Meredith has been so inundated with things about her mother, you know.
Yeah.
But I think
it's enough already for her.
Exactly. I think my opera classes, in a way, without it being a specific letter, is a love letter to Beverly and to every singer.
Well, it's definitely a love tribute. But, you know, when I think of that, I think
the actual
something
letter.
On paper in your handwriting that in this world becomes part of music history. I mean, can you imagine finding a love letter written to Mozart's younger sister by someone?
Absolutely.
Today, what that would be. I mean, I think about that just years ahead, not for the immediate gratification, but just adding something.
Yeah, because you can't save the texts.
That's right. And, you know, you can't reread a phone call and all that.
Exactly.
And handwriting is just... So if you ever feel like doing that, it'll be so important to do.
Oh, absolutely.
Just if you should ever have an extra hour in your life, which I know you don't right now, but to get back to the point is this started with a love letter. The letter to the opera director when you were 9.
Absolutely.
So just, you know, when your children want to do love letters, encourage them to do it.
Absolutely.
I've got lots of stories about children who have written love letters and what it's led to.
Oh, that's great.
The man who lives in this area, for example, who when he was a child wrote to Margaret Hamilton, the woman who played the Wicked Witch of the West.
Of course.
Well, nobody wrote love letters to her. Everybody didn't like her. She wrote back to him. He wrote back to her. And they had a lifetime friendship, just like you've had a lifetime friendship with this director.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Thank you for letting me make all those points about love letters.
Well, it's my pleasure.
Thank you, darling, for
coming
here to do this with me.
Thank you.
And please remember that, as you can see from this love letter to an opera director, that if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, writing a love letter not only is a special occasion, but may well lead to a lifetime of special occasions, as it did with you.
Absolutely.
Oh, thank you, darling. Mwah. This is Janet Gallen saying goodbye, and I'll talk to you soon.